What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with my favorite episodes. These are called Experts Corner, and they're interviews with short-term rental investors, allowing us to have you and I, I'm going to have Mr. Benjamin Kimball on. We're going to have a conversation, and you guys get to listen in on the ups, the downs, and the in-betweens of short-term rental investing. And Ben, you've been on before, and I'm going to have you kind of give a recap really quick to our listeners, but some of you longtime listeners. Ben has gone through one of the most up and down roller coaster experiences with short-term rentals that probably most people will never have to experience, maybe. But, you know, and we're going to talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, but he's lost a property in a full loss in a fire. You've had to deal with wildfires up in California and then mudslides shutting down roads and access issues and all kinds of everything in between. He's got property internationally in Portugal. So lots of things we can talk about, Ben, but I appreciate you joining me again. And we're going to get have a good conversation, kind of navigating the updates of everything.
It's always fun, Sean. Talk to you, buddy.
Yeah. I appreciate you coming on. Why don't you give everybody a little quick overview of background and kind of where we came to, kind of just the you know, I know everybody can go listen to the previous episode and we don't need to rehash the whole thing, but give everybody a little bit of an update and where you came from.
Sure. I come from the city planning world. I've been in local and regional government for 25 years full-time. That's been my job all along. Raised five kids, have a wonderful wife. He's very supportive and very good at all of this stuff we're doing. Couldn't happen without her at all.
Yeah.
We've always dabbled in real estate a little bit. My wife worked in title and mortgage companies in her past and knows the industry very well. We've had single family home rentals and but you know, as most everybody who gets on here says, they don't create a lot of monthly income. And so you're pretty much beholden to making some kind of appreciation over the long term if you're going to make any money in that thing. We started our journey with this when we bought a fourplex and we moved into one of the units. And we rented out the other three units and that paid our bills. We had a really low down payment because it was an owner-occupied loan. Mm-hmm. So we moved into it. Really low down payment. And that was kind of our break into this. And then COVID hit and we realized that the state of California passed a law that said that you can't kick out any tenants during COVID, even if they don't pay their rent. And we realized we were really exposed and that was a really bad situation for us. So we immediately decided we were going to try this growing trend of short-term rentals and we're really excited about it. We sold the fourplex. We had some money we made off of that thing. And we used that to buy a home to live in, single family home in town. And we had a little bit left over to go ahead and dive into this world. Back then, your program was called Lifestyle Asset University. We signed up. We followed everything. We've been big fans ever since. I tell people about you all the time. You really steered us clear in the initial stages from just purchasing in the wrong place, but you helped us do our due diligence to find the right place to do this and saved us from making a big mistake. We put all the money we had off the sale of that thing into a vacant lot. It was we're only talking about 25 grand, but that was all of our savings. And we bought this vacant lot in the mountains of California, inside a giant sequoia grove, inside Sequoia National Monument. Not the national park, the national monument. The national monument it's got a lot of sequoia trees and a lot of outdoor adventure, rafting, rock climbing, canyoneering, fishing, hiking, things that aren't allowed in national parks. People like to come up and do in the national monument.
Yeah.
It's a place I grew up going to ever since I was a little kid. I've all my favorite fishing spots up here and it really enjoy the South Sierras. Now, we know that Sean Moore doesn't necessarily encourage everyone to go invest in California per se because of the strong regulatory climate. And we can appreciate
that. You were making a strong case for me, what you just said before on the fourplex. So just that's one of the reasons, right?
Yeah, a case in point. Yeah. So, that is true. California can be pretty tough with the regulations, but it's also a very big state and very diverse. Yeah. And in our county, there are no current short-term rental restrictions at all. You pay your taxes, you can do it. And it's county by county. If you try to set one up in the Yosemite area, it's very restricted. But if you go to the next door county, there's no restrictions. There's a ton of short-term rentals. And that's serving the demand for Yosemite National Park. Right? Well, we have two national parks in our county, Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks. And we have Sequoia National Monument. So we have these really big draws, these big assets that bring in tens of millions of people every year, just like Utah does. And however, in California, construction is fairly restricted in mountain areas like that due to the environmental laws. And so what you have is just this huge pent up demand. You have all these visitors and way too few places for them to stay. Our cabin out in the National Monument is 2 hours away from the National Park, and about half of our visitors in the National Monument are staying there to go to the National Park 2 hours away. And then, and it just fills up with these people because there's just a big demand. So this is a great place to do that. Other than that, I would agree with you. I would never try to do this on the California coast or places where it's really restrictive. It's tough. So,
but I will tell you, man, after our last conversation, this is the truth, that when, like, I've never been tempted to invest into California until after you and I talked last time. I thought it might not be a bad spot in California to go. And so that was the closest I ever got to, like, looking in California was after you and I, the first conversation, you were telling me how things were going. So,
well, I'm not going to try to convince you or your other listeners to come over here because it keeps,
keep us out, right? Yeah.
I said that jokingly. There's actually plenty of room for all our investors here, but, but it's a place where the price entry, where I have done it, has been low and the income has been high. And it's just a magic spot. We found a place where we can do profitable properties. Even if we're not competing with a lot of Vodacy students on running at the top of the market. So it's just easy to destroy the competition. It's super easy.
Yeah.
Well, our Kings Canyon cabin right now is number one in the whole area. Number one.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. So how many properties? Tell us a little bit about the properties that you've got, and then how, I know last time we were talking, the road was still closed, right? From the mudslide, and it was, they were still trying to figure out when they were going to open it up, because when the fires came through and then the rains came through, the road washed out, right?
True. That was every time we had a catastrophic fire, which was 2 years in a row, three fires in 2 years in the area we invested. The lot that we bought just 2 weeks after we closed burned down and it was gone. And we had to sell it for a massive loss. And we basically regrouped and start over. And then from there, we were borrowing money for down payments. And it is possible. We know how to do it with the right loans. And we've been doing that ever since. We've been borrowing money for down payments. That's how we've done this, with no money out of our pockets.
Yeah.
And, but that creates it only really works if you've done your homework and you do have profitable properties. And for us, that means also self-managing our properties. So we do that until we pay off those loans, and then we're good. We're stable and we're,
right,
we're rocking and rolling. Yeah. After the fires, it took about a month to recover. So we lost about a month from our rent income. That was not that big a deal. It was really bad that the whole forest burned down and the things people came to see had been lost in such a broad area. But even with that, we noticed people still came up. We did lose a big chunk of our international guests up in Sequoia National Monument. There was a steady flow of people from Europe that come to see Trail of 100 Giants. It's a famous Sequoia Grove outside the park.
Yep.
And I'm not sure that has ever fully recovered, but we're still getting a lot of business, and we're doing better than even before the fires right now. So, what really hurt us was the flood year. We had 500% of our annual average rainfall. And the road washed out in several places, and it took them almost 9 months to rebuild the road and have it fully open. And so during that time, we're kind of doing everything we could. And I probably shouldn't talk about how we snuck some people in, but there were ways to get up there if you own property. And there were, we just, took a big loss that year. And so that's when I learned I probably should have had income insurance, business income insurance that would protect your income if your income stalled. I didn't really know about that at the time, but but we made it. We made it. It was at that time we had gotten up to three cabins. We had two cabins in the National Monument, and we had one that we'd sold in the National Park. And we used that sale to buy our Portugal condo on the south coast of Portugal. So we've done this. It's kind of complicated, but we've kind of bought and sold and moved things around quite a bit. We currently have a very successful cabin up in Kings Canyon National Park. It's inside the park in a community, a historic community. We could walk over to the visitor center. We can walk to the General Grant tree, which is the nation's Christmas tree and second largest tree in the world. We just walk over to it. That place is booked solid a year in advance. But we do have to close it during the winter because snow is so high. It's up to the roof and the roads are closed.
So,
at first that sounded kind of like a bummer that we'd have to close for 4 or 5 months every year. But then we realized it didn't matter. We made so much money off being in a national park in the summer that it paid our bills and gave us a nice profit on top. And we had this 4 month break where we just relax. We don't have to worry about it.
You didn't have to work.
It's actually kind of nice.
It's funny when somebody is underwriting those really seasonal areas like that. I always reference back to that property I used to have up in Island Park. And it was, we only opened it from Memorial Day to Labor Day. We didn't have to shut down, but it was an area that we didn't want. Like, there's a lot of snowmobiling and stuff up there, but we just didn't want to. The rates were a lot less. There just was a lot of wear and tear on the property. Guests have a hard time sometimes if they're not used to wood burning stoves and for heat and stuff. So we just chose to shut it down. But because it was so seasonal, those markets, like the same with your Kings Canyon property, is your rates are so high during the peak season. It doesn't matter, right? You're making enough money during that peak that it covers the rest of the year and then profits, and you get to take some time off, which is a huge bonus and less wear and tear on the property. And so I always tell people, if it pencils, those are some of the best properties to have.
I love it. And it really aligns with, I'm 2 to 3 years out of retirement now. And when I'm retired, I'll have this set up the way I want it with all my short-term rentals. And they're aligned seasonally because in the winter, I want to go stay at our Portugal place for a few months out of the year. And then
go to the beach, right?
That place rents really well in the summer. And it's dead in the winter. And that's when we like to be there. But it's hard to go and leave everything if it's not totally shut down. But we'll have it shut down.
Have it shut down and you use it, right?
Yeah. So
that's awesome. So tell me about Portugal. Some of the challenges, obviously, that you were navigating. What got you interested in Portugal, and then some of the challenge of investing internationally versus for a non-citizen of that country.
Absolutely. I lived in Brazil for a couple of years. I speak Portuguese, and we went on a trip there with my wife, and just decided we want to come here all the time. It's a lovely place. It's an affordable place to travel and live. Yeah. It's a great place to retire to, but we're not really thinking of permanent retirement over there. We're happy to just be there for part of the year, a couple months.
Yeah.
But we found, I did a lot of research back at the early days of doing this. I did my due diligence over there. I found a community I wanted to do this. Lagos is the name of the city on the south coast. It's a very historic city.
Yeah.
And it's just red hot with tourism in the summer, just packed, easy to rent. We make good money. Our rents have been going up every summer there since we got it. This gets better and better.
Yeah.
And, it's a good place. Our condo is surrounded by multi-million dollar homes. It's across the street from the beach. It's a resort. So it's got all the swimming pools, spas, and amenities built into it, and it's got full management. That's not necessarily the best thing to do for everybody, but it's nice when you live that far away to have it just taken care of. Yeah. The downside is that management costs money. Management fees are, I think, a little high. And I learned a lot after I bought it about European Union taxes. Those are high too. Those are actually higher than I expected. Yeah. It took us 6 months to buy it from start to finish. We had to go to San Francisco and meet with the consulate 3 times to sign papers.
Wow.
And Portugal's famous for being very bureaucratic and inefficient in matters like this. And it's just what you have to accept if you're going to have a place there.
Portugal or just governments in general, right?
They have a little bit worse than normal in my opinion. But they're also, Portugal's one of the safest countries on earth as far as crime. It's very low. It's got very good health care, excellent weather. It's the California coast all over again, but without the cost of being on the California coast. And so we just absolutely love it. The food's great. The people are very friendly. We've gone there every year with our family or by ourselves since we've gotten it a few years ago. And it's just this nice townhouse. It's got 2 master bedrooms and a big rooftop patio. And we love it.
That's awesome.
Now, it is our lowest performing property as far as monthly income. We're usually teetering around break even still.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that management in place, right? You got that full service management that gets expensive, especially resort HOAs, amenities, all that stuff. It'll, you know, a lot of times when you buy properties like that, a good property is going to be close to break even.
And that's true. But we have had appreciation of this asset far beyond what we've had here in our properties in the United States. So a really nice trade off.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is, that's a great trade-off if you're able to capture that appreciation. People always ask me, I want to get your opinion on this, of what do I have to think about? Like, what's different about investing internationally and in a different area? And I said, listen, that, you know, hospitality is universal. Underwriting is pretty universal. You know, consumer behavior is pretty universal. Marketing is universal. All of those things are all the same. You really have to just understand the local laws and culture. You know, what are your ownership rights as a non-citizen of a different country? What are your lending options? It's really the logistics of like the details of the deal. But once you own the property, everything else is pretty much the same. Would you agree?
Totally. Yeah, you just got to know it's country by country, and you just got to know what their take is. Some countries are really leaning into attracting more tourism, and some countries are not. Yep. And Portugal at the time was really interested in foreign investment and retirees and everything to boost their economy. And it's worked for them. Now they're trying to maybe slow it down a little bit, but there are plenty of other places that just would be perfectly happy. I was looking at Brazil a little while ago. It's really easy to buy a place there.
Where you spent a couple of years over there, that'd be a familiarity there that you could go, you know, check it. I always tell people too, like usually people who invest internationally have spent time a lot of times in some of those areas and they're familiar. There's a level of familiarity. You usually don't just go somewhere blind. Like, you know, there's usually, because you have to understand the local culture and the local laws and be able to navigate a lot of that. But as far as short-term rentals go, everything's the same. I mean, it's underwriting the right property in the right area. It's being able to set up a unique experience and create this immersive experience for a target audience. And it's understanding how to market your property and get somebody in there. I mean, that's all the same. It doesn't matter where you're at.
All the same. Yeah. We were looking a while back at all of the interesting turns going on in Hawaii right now, especially Maui. Everybody's familiar with that. The government shutting down existing Airbnbs, not just not allowing new ones. Yeah. And man, it'd be nice to be in the Pacific, but I don't know how you do it. And I did a broader search and Laura, I'm going to give everybody my secret here. Fiji actually is begging for people to do Airbnbs. They open the doors wide and they make it very easy to purchase and set up and do it. And it's fairly profitable compared to the other islands I was looking at. Like, Wow. There are great spots all over, like right by the beach, great surfing, great snorkeling, all that stuff. Like,
hey, you don't usually have to twist anybody's arm to get over to Fiji. I mean, it's like, it's the same. Like, we love Hawaii too, but every time somebody's like, "Why you guys go to Hawaii every year? Why don't you own a property there?" I'm like, have you seen what they do and how they're not exactly the most short-term rental friendly islands for the most part.
I feel for our brothers over there and sisters that are struggling to do short-term rentals. If you have one, it's fantastic, right?
Yeah, if you've got one, it can be really good, but it's tough to navigate those regulations over there.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I have a lot of places around the world I look, but I'm very happy with our Portugal place. We're gonna. It's not just the appreciation, and it's also a lifestyle thing for our retirement that just aligns with the timing of how we manage our other properties really well now.
Love it. And so tell me, we were talking a little bit before we hit play that you're kind of in that mode of kind of always feeling like you can do a little bit better, like you've got the number one property in the whole area, but you're always looking to improve and raise the bar and which I think is important, right? There's always things that we could do to maximize. What are some of the things that you're really trying to pay attention to when you make those choices on maximizing? Are they database decisions? Are we looking at it? Where you are setting a high watermark, you are already the number one. Is it just more of, hey, listen, I know what we're doing here at Bodicey and kind of the things that are working in other markets. So I feel like I can get that same benefit in these markets where I'm already operating at a high level.
Well, that's a good question. We kind of just focus in on two spots here in California. We have two towns, two communities, and we focused everything into those two. And we bought and sold in both places, Kings Canyon National Park, in our little historic community there, and then in the National Monument. And so we know a lot. The National Monument, we have about 25 competitors in that town. I know the other short-term rental owners. I know the managers that work in that area. Yeah. We know the cleaners. We know handymen. We've got a good group there. We know our competition, and we know what our property doesn't have that theirs does. Mm-hmm. And we know how much they're getting roughly. And we're actually doing pretty well. We're above average in that one, but we're not number one yet in that market. And that was our first real cabin that we built as a family. We survived the fires. Before that, I had done a joint project. So this is the first one that we owned ourselves and we had total control of what we did. But there's more we can do. There's more amenities to put outside that. The inside is great, but I want to add a bathroom. I want to make it more of an adventure base. Put some outbuildings that look like A-frame cabins and things for the kids to climb on and trees. There's a lot of things
that's fun.
Amenity wise to, really lean in. And when I decide what to do, I'm really looking at my reviews. I'm looking at the feedback. And over time, I start to see patterns. I see what people really appreciate the most about our property and what they think we should have. You know, I just listen to the customer a lot. And in Kings Canyon, it's actually got pretty simple. Our cabin is it's nice. It's been redone. It's three bedrooms. It's got this really cool bunk bed thing going on upstairs that's fun for the kids to sleep on. But the number one thing they love about our cabin, well, I'll just say the two number one things is it's a historic 100-year-old cabin inside a national park. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing as a really nice, huge cabin in some of these other areas. This, when people stay there, they want that experience of the way things used to be. It's
the nostalgia of it, right?
Yeah,
that's what they're looking for.
It's just really an authentic experience. And so we just lean into that. And it has this fire pit outside, and it's got these nice kind of swings that swing off this wood frame that's been built. And really, it's all about for these people that come to spend all day in the national park and they come to our cabin at night. And they get to sit around the campfire with their kids and tell stories. And we hear about what they do there all the time. And it's just their favorite thing in this old historic cabin. Yeah. And they pay big money to stay there, right? Like these.
Yeah.
And so we've actually purchased another cabin just around the corner and we're remodeling it now. And we're just going to lean into it even more. Nearby, they have tent cabins that the national park runs that have walls and then a canvas thing.
Yeah.
So we're making one of the bedrooms look like the inside of a tent cabin. We're putting canvas up on the ceiling and make it feel like they're camping at the national park, right?
Yeah.
The kids, they just want that. They want to do what they used to do as kids themselves, which is camping and all this stuff. And we're just trying to, we're looking around at things we used to do in the area and building that into the project. Like,
I love that. And it's so, and I mean, and this is the number one cabin. And like you said, it's the game we're in is so experiential, and people love the stories of the history in some of these properties. And like you said, the just leaning into the nostalgia of it, not trying to remodel it out, right? And not trying to modernize it too much. It's not what people want. They want to be in a historic cabin right in the middle of the park and be like right by the general store, right by the you know, you go down and you're right in the middle of it all. That's what they're wanting. And so, like you said, don't try to remove that. Don't try to remodel it out like we see a lot of people do. Like, it's like you don't want to modernize it too much. You want that story intact, right? And it's what people love, and it's the experience we want to have, right? And so, and I love that the next one you're putting together is you're just leaning more into that. It's going to be, and I'm sure it'll do every bit as good. And now you just, because it's the same experience. It's what people want. I don't know if you saw Airbnb's doing they did a big algorithm change for this year. And one of the things that they're doing is using AI to basically feed our interests and our bias in the properties that they serve us. And the way that they're trying to do that is find these properties with these great experiences that actually have some sort of a theme or some sort of a story or some sort of history that they can identify, right? And so what's going to be really hard for the algorithm to identify are these brand new model homes. Everybody has these beautiful, like, nice homes, but there's really no story. There's really no experience, target audience, anything tied to it. And the algorithm is going to search for properties like yours that have a very specific type of an audience or story. And and we already know consumers love it. Like, we're leaning into it right now because we love, you know, we've been talking about this on consumer behavior and creating a target audience, a unique immersive experience for that target audience. We know that helps us there. Now we're going to add fuel to the fire because the algorithm is saying, hey, we want more of these properties because, you know, social media, just like if I look at my feed on social media, whatever I'm talking about, my phone is, you know, it's showing me whatever I'm thinking about or talking about or interested in. They're going to do the same with properties. And the only way it's going to work is for the people with unique sort of experiences or stories to tell. And that's why this property is going to continue to do so well. But the generic model homes, everything is modernized, everything is the same, kind of you got that sterile, you know, commoditized experience. It's going to be very difficult for those types of property, even though some of them are beautiful, but they're just going to be difficult to stand out or the algorithm to feed them, because how do you feed a bias of, you know, the same as everybody else's? You don't, right?
Every time we're there, we see something we can improve. We do, maybe a new picture on the wall, maybe tweak this, tweak that. We have some big projects coming in for our first place, which we did not maximize the way we should have. But on our new ones, what we're doing now is doing a little better job of taking your advice and making sure that we have it to its highest potential right out the gate.
Yeah.
And we're kind of on an aggressive course for that, because I have goals I want to hit before I get to retirement age in a couple of years. And I want to be able to do this full time. And I'm trying to do my acquisitions right now while I still have my full time.
Right. Right.
But, no, it's definitely important what you teach. Being able to take your class at the beginning of this process has helped me avoid so many mistakes on setting these things up. And we were tempted, just like so many people, to just get the minimum out there and worry about it later. But that's not the way to go. You've got to have those experiences.
Well, and I always, you know, I always say, as a drawback of short-term rentals is that they're capital intensive and a little bit of time intensive, especially on the front end. But you mentioned something also earlier that you said, hey, listen, we started building this. was zero money down. We didn't, we were a no money down like type of a strategy. And that's not something we talk about a lot. And it's not something that, you know, I always tell people, hey, listen, you got to really have these budgeted out because I don't want people with their backs against the wall, but I'd love you to dive into that a little bit more. And, you know, like maybe help people understand what that strategy really looks like and how somebody can think about that and do that.
Well, I could tell you what we did. And you're right. When you do it with no money down, you've got to borrow more. And you're exposing yourself to debt and obligations and possibly stress. And it was definitely stressful for us having all these debts during the natural disasters. And so, yeah. but it's overcomeable. You got to have access to the capital. And I'll share one thing that we did that helped us get money to do this. Back at the very beginning, I bought a 1968 Ford Mustang for under $10,000. And, my sons and I, we fixed up the engine. My son would take this Mustang to auto shop class his senior year in high school, and they'd work on this thing. And we had this old car. What we learned, we eventually paid it off right away. And what we learned when we needed some money for our short-term rental is we could go get a loan on this car 4 times the actual amount of the car.
Right.
Because they don't know how to evaluate an old car like that. That was just one of the little secret things we did to get a big chunk of money to do. So we actually did two of these old cars. I had a 1969 Chevy C10 truck. Same thing. I went out and got a loan on it for 4 times what I paid for it and had all the capital I needed to do the project. But then I would turn around at the end of that first summer, the first high season, and I could pay off one of those car loans with the profits on both cabins. Right? And so that was just a tool that we used in the early days to get off the ground.
Wow. Wow. I love the stories of like the resilience, creativity, all of those different things, you know, loaded into one. And like you once it's paid off, you kind of have that little line of credit, right? You're like, okay, if I need to, I can tap into it again, pay it off. And so having some assets, so that's awesome.
Plus I get to drive the car. I love driving it.
Exactly. I'm smiling right now because my son and my daughter, they turn 15 in May, and he's been wanting an old truck so bad. And so he's been saving up and he just got one. It's not quite that old. He got himself it's an old Ford truck, but it's not, he was trying to get some in the 70s, but he didn't quite get there. And but we've been fixing it up and stuff, and it's kind of fun.
No, and it was great father and son time that I had too. And so there have been times we've been tempted to sell it, but we just can't because we might need it for the next project.
That's awesome. So was that the main source of the creative funding that you were able to do?
So it was a big source. It got us about half of the capital we needed. We did have, once we got that first cabin with the Mustang's help, we were able to turn around and get a HELOC on it a year later for the next project. And so that paid for part of it too. So again, we were borrowing off the equity of our house or these cars all the way up to where we are now.
That's awesome.
And we just got for this other cabin that we're doing right now, I got another Mustang loan in the bank. We paid it off the first year, and then it's there when we need it. If, you know, we don't always, you know, it's ideal to kind of pursue it the way you recommend, which is save up your money and then you'll have the money down to do the next project. But in Kings Canyon National Park, there's most of the time there's not any cabins for sale.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when one comes up, if we don't have the money yet in hand from our rents, we feel like we got to jump on it anyways. We'll go get the car loan, or, you know, it's just kind of when the opportunity strikes.
Yeah.
Got to be ready for that. And so that's really helped us. And so, yeah, ideally we wouldn't always do it like that, but there are times where it makes sense now, even now that we're past it. And the other thing that really helped us is if you're going to do it this way, you got to self-manage, you got to have the right place. You got to have something that really is profitable. The break-even properties aren't going to work well on this. You've got to have one that's profitable.
Yeah.
And then you got to be able to have that money to handle that debt load until you can pay it off. And eventually we realized we sold one of our properties right after the floods. We turned around. It was it was our best one on an annual basis. Very well performing. the cabin we had purchased right next to the river in the National Monument. So we had two cabins up in the National Monument at the time. We sold it because we learned that when we show potential buyers that are investors our monthly income off these cabins, the offer price would go up.
Yeah.
And we sold that place for higher than an appraisal value, right? Like just, and then we turned around and paid off all those remaining non-first mortgage debts. And that leveled us up.
Yeah.
And what, if you're going to do this, you're going to be in level one for a while till you can get one of these places sold for a big profit. And once you paid off all those debts you got into to get started, it opens up all kinds of opportunities. Now we get to keep all of our summer profits, reinvest it in new projects, or pay down other debts. We kind of do both depending on the year. My goal is to have one of these places totally paid off in 2.5 years, and we're on track to do that, no problem. And so
that's so awesome. I love it. And I love that. I love breaking down just the creativity. You just have to think outside the box sometimes. And I will tell you, you know, as much as I teach a very, very conservative approach of just saving up and doing all that stuff, I've been very opportunistic throughout my years and plenty of times, you know, leveraged all kinds of different stuff to get into the right properties. But it's understanding the game first, understanding what an opportunity actually looks like, so you don't back yourself into a wall. Like you said, you've got to buy assets that perform. You've got to understand the game you're going to be playing. And then you have to be disciplined to actually pay off those loans. And like you said, when you understanding when to level up, when to sell an asset to be able to get out of level one to level two, and the opportunities just get bigger and bigger, and there are more, you know, more opportunities as you continue to level up. And it's a game of taking those steps along the way. And like I always tell people, you know, it's not a, this is a get rich slow game is what I tell people. And so, but done correctly. And with, you know, when you stay in the game long enough and you understand it, and you can get creative at times, there's plenty of times where, you know, when you know, you're going into these properties where you're basically 100% financed. And, you know, if a property can support it and you're disciplined with it, it absolutely can work out, right? There's obviously reasons why I don't teach that, is because there's a lot of people who will back themselves into a wall and not understand the game fully. But when you do understand the game, it can be a really great tool to not sit and wait forever to get started. Like I love the stories of just diving in. I have these goals. I want to figure it out. Those of you that are listening, if you haven't heard mine and Ben's first conversation, just go search Benjamin Kimball on our podcast and go listen to that first conversation. But man, I can't tell you, Ben, how proud I am of you guys, how fun it is to always hear your updates and the stories, and just the resilience, and then seeing you go from, you know, those next levels and hearing the success stories. Because if there's ever been anybody, especially in the beginning stages of this game, to say, hey, listen, I'm gonna throw in the towel and do something else. You had every excuse to do that and didn't take that. And I can't tell you how much I love that about you guys and the, just the resilience and the determination to reach those goals. And everything you're getting right now is well deserved, and there's gonna be so much more for you. So super proud of you from our side and watching you guys do what you're doing. As we kind of wrap up today, what comes to your mind of all the lessons learned and all the things that you wish people would, you know, maybe you could tell your younger self, maybe you just want somebody to know, hey, listen, I want to make sure I get this message out before we wrap up. Is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah. Level one is sufficiently scary that it will scare off most people from doing this. What if something bad happens? What if this, how can I be that exposed with debt? And I will say that, you know, we had the same fears but we came out, we had the natural disasters that we've survived all of that. And we've come out on the other end stronger than ever. And the fear is gone now. If we can survive catastrophic fires and floods and all this stuff and have that debt and still be able to make it work, as long as you have the right properties and you have the right experience, we don't worry about that at all anymore. And how to help others overcome that fear and dive in, it must be a real challenge for you and the team. But I would just say don't be afraid.
Yeah.
the worst is not as bad as you think. So.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. It is scary, right? When you've never done something, but isn't it? It's such a, people don't realize what a massive advantage it is when you actually have to face some of those challenges. And because then you look back and like, oh, that wasn't probably as hard as I made it out to be. It was hard, but now that I know I can do it, I'm not really worried about having to deal with it again, right? Because I know I can survive it. And sometimes those challenges are some of our biggest assets down the line. And then just being around people that are going through some of the same things and that are having to fight the same dragons, or, you know, and being able to, you know, surround yourself with other people that, hey, listen, it's a hard road. You know, there's no guarantees in it. But it can be a really fun road as well. And we can build that confidence and our resilience and determination and like all those things that we love, right? Like that personal responsibility and self-reliance that we all like want to plant that flag in the sand and say, that's us. Right. And I love that part of it. So Ben, I appreciate you, my man. This has been a really fun conversation for me. Those of you that are listening, we know because you tell us all the time that these are your favorite conversations as well. And so we know how valuable your time is. We appreciate you spending it with us. If you haven't heard the part one of this story, I very much encourage you to go listen to it because you'll have just as much fun on listening to that conversation as you did on this one. So as a favor, at the end of these episodes, you guys know I don't run ads or sponsorships. So the only way the show grows is if you guys share it. If you know somebody else would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show. If you don't know anybody, just give us a like or a thumbs up on whatever platform you're watching or listening on and a review, and the algorithm will actually share it with other people like you. So those things are all appreciated. The final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.